Herzlich willkommen zur Weihnachtsausgabe vom Kassenzone.de Podcast. Heute zu Gast der Knusper-Chef Erich Komor. Die vierte Ausgabe mittlerweile zum Thema Lebensmittel-Onlinehandel. Damit haben wir angefangen vor 2 Wochen mit Udo Gieslich. Dann habe ich mit Florian Heinemann über Nestlé gesprochen und vor ein paar Tagen ging hier der Podcast mit Alex Planitzer zu Flyby Shop live. Und eine der spannendsten Neugründungen bzw. neuen Aktivitäten im deutschen Lebensmittelliefermarkt ist ganz sicher Knusper, die gestützt werden von dem tschechischen Unicorn der Rohlik-Gruppe. Die sind unter anderem auch aktiv in Österreich mit Gurkel und geben richtig Gas. Die sind mittlerweile bei über 2000 Orders am Tag, die sie im Münchner Umland ausliefern, haben einen sehr einzigartigen Warenkorb, also ein sehr einzigartiges Angebot mit vielen lokalen Händlern und haben viele dieser kleinen grünen Haken am Geschäftsmodell, die man bei den anderen Modellen vermissen könnte, liefern in unter 3 Stunden und haben auch sonst eine ganze Menge richtig gemacht. Wie sie das machen, wie schnell sie wachsen, woher Erich all diese lokalen Lieferanten bekommt, woher sie die Fahrer bekommen, wo der Engpass ist, wann das zweite Lager in München aufgebaut wird, welche nächsten Städte kommen, das wird alles im Podcast besprochen. Das könnt ihr dann unter dem Weihnachtsbaum in Ruhe hören oder in den Tagen. Ist wirklich eine super Folge geworden und schließt, glaube ich, das Jahr für mich zumindest aus Kassenzone-Podcast-Sicht nochmal sehr, sehr spannend ab. Es werden auch im nächsten Jahr ein paar E-Food-Podcasts kommen, aber das hier ist, glaube ich, ein sehr besonderer. Der hat bestimmt so viel Neuheitswert oder Informationswert wie der Podcast, den ich damals mit Michael Müller aufgenommen habe, dem CEO und Gründer von Picknick. Das ist jetzt aber auch schon über 2 Jahre her, ist eine ganze Menge passiert und wir reden auch kurz über Picknick und versuchen rauszufinden, was da der USP von Knusper ist gegenüber Picknick. Also es wird sehr, sehr spannend, dieser Podcast und auch die nächsten 1-2 Jahre mit der Knusper-Expansion. Hört rein, genießt das Fest oder versucht sozusagen den Weihnachtsbraten gut zu verdauen, wann immer ihr auch diesen Podcast hört. Und erstmal viel Spaß dabei. Erich, welcome to the Commerce Talks and Kassenzone Podcast. Today we are talking about one of my favorite topics, which is like food delivery services in Europe. And you are one of the managing directors of one of the most anticipated service in Germany and making a lot of noise in the Munich area. So welcome to our podcast. Maybe let's start with a short introduction of yourself and the business you're managing, which is Knusper.
Hi, Alexander, and thanks for having me. It's a pleasure and honor. I am actually a banker by origin, so it's the last thing you would expect from someone who is in charge of managing an e-grocery business, but I have switched my gears after 25 years in banking to the surprise of my friends, and I'm spending a lot of time explaining that the similarity between the online banking and online grocery delivery is massive. Apart from the physical technology, it's all focused on online presence, fabulous front ends, great applications, very neat websites, perfect customer service, all built on a strong software architecture. So that's me, a banker turned e-grocery manager. And I have started Knusper a little more than a year ago in summer 2020, when I was asked and offered by the owner of Rohlik, which is our parent company, based in Prague and serving the Czech e-grocery business, when I was approached by Tomáš to build the sister of Czech Rohlik in Germany under the name Knusper, which is the name we came up with for the German market with my colleagues here in Munich. And it took us approximately 1 year to find our first warehouse, reconstructed, prepared for the launch, and we launched Knusper in exactly 4th of August 2021.
2021, 4th of August, which means you're 4 months now into the business. Maybe let's start with the mother holding. So though it's not a fairly brand new business, you're not starting out of out from scratch, but you can use some infrastructure, software, financial resources from the Rohlik holding. So how relevant is Rohlik for the Czech e-food delivery market? How big is it?
Actually, it's a global player. You would not expect it from a small country of 10 million, but Rohlik is one of the world contenders for this model of e-grocery, which is a full scope e-grocery business, not just a niche player in a particular small segment, such as super fast delivery or the fresh only. There are only very few relevant global players who can master this model. Rohlik is one of the very few. Rohlik is one of the very few who is mastering it to the point where it is now a darling of investors. And it's a six-year-old company. It was started in 2015 when e-grocery business in its home market, Czech Republic, was tiny. It was actually less than 0.5%, even less than the average of European Union's average for e-grocery was at that year. And within the 5 years of its existence, it turned the Czech Republic into one of the most penetrated e-grocery markets, where Rohlik currently owns 70% of the market share. And it's the most penetrated market along the UK that there is in Europe, driven by Rohlik's phenomenal business and customer model. More than even business, it's rather the customer model that we like to talk about, because that explains why it's such an interesting player. And it took a very short time before it became obvious that we can really bring e-grocery from a small niche to a significant game. And in Czech Republic, in cities where Rohlik is operating, actually more than 20% of customers are actually buying groceries regularly or accidentally, irregularly with Rohlik. And they don't go to supermarkets at all, or only sometimes. And that
what is the market share then from the e-food business in Czech? So we have. In Germany, you are calculating somewhere between 1.5% and 2.5%, which is like the online part of the whole grocery market, which is like 200 plus billion. In I think in UK, it's close to 10%, if I remember correctly. What is the share then in the richer country?
The latest numbers in UK are 5.5% to 6%. Of the total. Dutch is relatively high with 3.5%. Average European Union is below 1%, actually Germany as well. The whole grocery market, which is everything that you buy in supermarket, not just the food, but also the near food, such as Waschmittel and utensils. Okay.
Which is like the drugstore business in Germany, which is DM and Rossmann. Correct,
but everything that actually sells in all Rewe, Edekas, Lidl's, it's not just the food, but the near food, as we call it. It's roughly 300 billion euro in Germany alone. And the e-grocery comparable segment in the online part is less than 2.2 billion the last year. So it's below 1%. And in the Czech Republic, we are now nearing the penetration, actually, that is in the UK. And that was less than 1% 5 years ago. And as I say, we now have 70% of the market share. And it is driven by what we do, because we were the only and first player that could bring the full scope grocery proposition, which is something that we really passionately talk about, which is everything that you expect and buy from supermarkets, as well as everything that you would have to go to specialty stores, local Hofladens, fresh market on the weekends. We are able to combine both elements in a single online offering and deliver it to our customers within 3 hours. And that is very difficult model to pull through, and we have nearly no competitor in that segment.
Yes. So if I would have to explain this model to some friends who see now Gorillas or other like models, it's definitely like faster delivery that I understand. So instead of like waiting a day or 2 weeks in the Rewe case, which usually, and there's no delivery at all in my region, for example, you can get it like within like 3 hours. If I order before a certain cutoff hour, I would guess like before 3 o'clock. Is it correct?
Actually, right now, we are starting this interview at nearly 6 o'clock. And if you now go to the app or web of Knusper, you could still order for today and it would arrive at your home at 9 p.m.
And the assortment is comparable to like a Edeka Rewe market, or how, and or how, like from size wise, how can I compare it?
it's actually better and significantly better, which is the thing that differentiates us. Because yes, it is absolutely critical that customers can order on the same day, even at 6 p.m. you order and you get it at 9 p.m. But the thing that really scores high with our customers is the assortment, because you can do your complete and superior Wocheneinkauf with us, not just a small niche segment. So as I said, everything that you can buy in Reves and Edekas, you find with us. And apart from that, you find the best local butchers that cannot be bought in Edekas, the best bakers that exist in one place in Munich, the best fresh fish that you would have to go to a specialty store, or Italian cheese that are only in one place in a city. And you could get all those things, but you would have to drive to Edeka or Reve and six other places to get the complete assortment. And that includes not only specialty stores, but the part that they're really is keen and warm to our hearts is local farmers. So we bring the best strawberries 6 kilometers from Munich, and we bring them virtually harvested in the morning in the field. And within 6 hours, we deliver it to customers living in Munich areas currently. So it's this super broad, locally focused, regional food driven assortment.
Which I found very impressive. And what I don't understand, or what do you need to explain a little bit to me, is like how were you able to build it up so fast? Because if I understand you correctly, and there were some numbers flowing around in our market in the recent weeks, you had like a meeting or like a public relations meeting at your warehouse in Munich, and there you said you have like 20,000 customers already, 1,500 orders a day already, with basket sizes above 80 euros. How do you manage within only 4 months to get to all this food partners, like local farmers, the top-notch butchers, bakeries? So all the other services that entered the market actually went to the Grossisten. So they went to like a company like Edeka or Rewe or the big distributors behind and said, okay, I need this kind of 5,000 products. Can you deliver it to me like tomorrow? So how was it possible for you to fill up your warehouse? Have you started like way earlier before August to fill up all the assortment?
So first, let me correct you. We sold 1,500 orders a day 2 weeks ago. Now we are selling 2,000 and more a day, and it's growing significantly week by week. But yes, we started to build our assortment roughly 4 to 5 months before our launch. It takes nearly half a year to build this phenomenal range. But we haven't had a single partner who would not be interested to work with us. And that is because a surprising part that very few people expect. Out of roughly 520 suppliers and producers who deliver suppliers with the goods for our customers, more than 30% are very local producers, virtually a single farmer, Hofladen, producer of potatoes near Neufahrn, a concrete baker, Brot Manufaktur Schmidt, with phenomenal bread, who have their local production, but they really understood the opportunity and liked the cooperation with us, primarily because we enlarged the market. We suddenly, with few strokes of internet online propositions, we made their phenomenal products, which so far could be only sold in their local store, available to everybody in and around Munich, 2 million population instantly available. So the first is this differentiation. We make it available to everybody virtually from day one. The second part is, this is how we built our proposition. It's a very sad story where it starts with, which is over the last 30 or 40 years, nearly 250,000 farmers went out of the business in Germany. And in the last 2 years alone, 10,000 and more farmers went out of business in last 2 years in Bayern alone. And that is the impact of the large-scale retailers who cannot accommodate small producers because it doesn't fit their logistics and business model. And we come with the opposite mentality. We are built for our platform, for our online business and app to be available for the small producers. And we have proven that this is not talk, but reality, because it is already true, not only in Germany, but it is true in Czech Republic, Hungary, and Austria. And they saw the phenomenal growth that we bring to the local partners who otherwise would be constrained to their local businesses. So it took us 4 to 6 months to build the assortment, but very fast.
But how do you help those local producers to scale their production? Because if I'm looking here at my local butcher, he might have some resources to put on top on his existing business, which is very brick and mortar driven. But he would be not able to fulfill like the demand of an additional like 10,000 customers, because there's only a limited amount of cattle he can slaughter in a given time frame. Same like for the bakery. So yes, like a 10% on top to the existing production that might be possible within the given like production infrastructure, resource wise, with like people, factory space, whatever is needed there. But how is it possible, like, for the local tomato farmer to scale with such a demand? And you said yourself, so just 2 weeks ago we talked about like 1,500 orders, now 2,000 plus, which usually cannot be fulfilled with local producers. They can be a part of the basket, but they are the smaller part of the basket.
The beauty is they don't have to scale up, not beyond the scale where they want and feel comfortable to scale up. One of the discussions that I've had just 2 weeks ago with Herr Brandl, one of the wonderful farmers who produces small scale cattle in a very small numbers, but wonderfully clean. Perfect production. And we were talking about his scale, and he was asking, so he wants to scale up. And my discussion with him was, oh, don't push it. We don't want you to scale up fast, because you might lose the beauty, the clarity and cleanliness of your production, because we know every single of our customers in terms of what their food preference and dietary preference are. And we can target the offering of small-scale producers to the very few customers who are interested in a particular proposition. Not everybody is interested in a very specific type of beef meat that may be relevant to few customers only, specifically interested in that type. And we know which are, I don't know, 500 customers out of our 20,000 who really want to get the beefsteaks from Herr Brandl. And for others, we bring other local producers. So the beauty is that we can target the very small clusters of customers to whom a single proposition from a particular farmer or producer is most relevant. And they are very keen to reward that farmer with a fair price, which is what we match. We match a specific demand for very high quality or specialty food, doesn't have to be expensive, but it's somehow special, with the type of customers that are keen to get it. And we look for those niches for every type of different customers. Someone doesn't want to have specific beef, but they are interested in cheese from Italy. Others want to have the best broth from Manufaktur Schmidt. And we see those specific clusters of customers, and we bring more and more producers to get what these clusters actually most demand.
Let's stick with the Brandl example, because you might know I was a cattle farmer myself. I had the double amount of cattle from Mr. Brandl, also highest quality. And obviously, it's very hard to scale, because people only want to have the rump steak, right? But there's lots of more you have to sell, like rouladen and all the other stuff, like from the cattle. And he's a small farm. So if I read it on his website correctly, he says he has 30 to 40 like cattle, so he can... based on this number, there might be like 5 to 10 he can sell on a yearly basis if he grow out of his own herd. You're getting like 2. Are you able like to sell all parts of the cattle for him? Because that's usually the problem from this local producer. There's like peak demand for certain parts, on the best part of the cheat, best part of the cattle, best tomato, whatever. So are you able to offer this kind of long tail products through your platform? And is there enough demand then for, let's say, flank steak was a part which was not very popular like 3 years ago. Nobody wanted flank steak, and then somehow it was like in cooking TV, and then everybody thought flank steak is the best part. It's not true. It's actually part of the minced meat portfolio. But now everybody wants it. But would you be able to fulfill this part of long tail for Mr. Brandl and pay him a better price? Because right now he's selling like you most likely like 10 kilo, 5 kilo boxes of this kind of kettle, and like smaller parts in his Hofladen. But what is the value proposition here? Are you going to him and say, okay, I will buy an option for like the next 5 years production for this many cattle, or how does it work?
That's actually goes back to what we do. Yes, we sell it. It's translates and shows actually in two things. One, it actually works for Herr Brandl to the point where he's really wanting to expand. And I am the one who tells him, don't go too fast. Just go to the pace which allows you to keep the growth and on the healthy side. And it demonstrates on the other side, which is that despite we take all the long tail, we have nearly no shrink. And compared to traditional players, there is very little loss of the food on our side. It's partly because we see the clusters of the customers which are interested. Some, as you say, want the fillet steaks only. Others are interested in the flank steak. Others take the other parts of the beef. So we actually are talking to the clusters of customers in parallel. And even though our target group is relatively homogeneous, you've got the clusters that really cover the whole cow, as you if you describe it that way. And the second part is the reasons why we have very little losses on the food side is because there is a chain of long tail settlements that allow us to make sure that very little is thrown out. Part of it is customers really love our category called Rete Lebensmittel, which are the items that by all the projections might expire without being sold. And we offer them to customers as a save the food category, which scores very high with customers. This is not about getting a discount. Sure, the meat comes with a lower price than normally, but people are much more interested, at least in our target group, in making sure the food is not thrown than just and only to get the discount. So that's the first step. Second step is every day we've got the cooperation with the food sharing. You surely know how they operate. And what we do is, since we operate in an industrial zone where there are not many services for our 600 colleagues, we are operating our own operated food truck where we are actually using the food that might expire in 2 to 3 days to cook virtually. Yeah, really great food. I go there every time I can because this is a restaurant quality food made to some extent from the food that might otherwise later be thrown out.
Yep. You know, so I love the model, obviously. So it has all the ingredients that we have been looking for years. And I've been in contact with a dozen, maybe two dozen of this like local sales initiatives where they try to connect Hofladens and helping the producers to sell stuff which cannot be sold because of the infrastructure from Rewe, Edeka, and Aldi. But it almost sounds too good to be true. That's why I'm asking this question. I trust you, and there might be a lot of truth in it, but I need to understand it a bit better, especially on with the scale and the scaling mode you are in. So growing slow and steady, that's a little bit easier to digest. Can you guide us through like the customer journey? So when do you order the food that is ordered from a customer? So when is it in the warehouse? So how do you plan this kind of inventory management? So what is needed like in order to fulfill this order in the warehouse? How many orders can you put on one of your delivery cars? So because that is one of the big disadvantages from other models, that there is only like 2-3 deliveries per hours per car, which makes the last mile very expensive. Maybe you have like a better idea how to work it out. And obviously, if you're working with like local producers, there's still kind of a margin cap, right? We are not in the fashion business. You cannot charge like 3 or 4 times the price you've paid to the producers. There's still a limited margin. Maybe can you guide us a little bit through this kind of process? So we can understand sure. better how it works?
Sure. We have two sets of prices, competitive prices that are the prices of everything that exists in other places. So if we sell something that you can buy in Rewe, Edeka or on Amazon Fresh, we compare those prices. Virtually daily, we've got the comparison engines that make sure that the products that exist elsewhere on the market are priced exactly to the level where you can buy it elsewhere.
So they match the lowest price for, but you're not matching it in the from the brick and mortar perspective, that but you match like the online available price. So if there's kind of, let's say a Kühne cucumber at Rewe online is €2 per piece, then, and this is the lowest price, then you would match this price in your store. But if Kühne cucumbers is offered for, let's say, €1 at Aldi, you don't match this price.
As is the case, 98%, particularly because when you talk about the businesses that have got both the offline and online in parallel, 98% the pricing is same. Mm-hmm. Only on very few promotional items, typically the price is differentiated in reality. So though we compare on the online engines, you get also on comparisons to offlines. Mm-hmm. But we also compare to Amazon Fresh, we compare to DM Drogerie on the non-food prices to make sure that actually we match those. Okay, those are the competitive prices. And then we have the fair prices. And that is for the local producers, the farmers, the regional suppliers. Those that you cannot typically find online, they don't exist in the traditional supermarkets. And there we work with the suppliers to get them the fair price because virtually our raison d'être starts with keeping and supporting as many local producers on a good, stable business as we can, because it's a perfect symbiosis. If we would not have enough local producers, specialty suppliers who make our assortment so much different to Rewe's, Edeka's, Amazon Fresh, we would be just a copycat of online Rewe's, Amazon Fresh and Edeka's. And therefore, this is not a talk. This is our absolutely critical part of the business model. And it's not a short-term game. We are already in this at least 6 years. And it is working better by a day because it revives the small producers' access to large market without being forced to scale up beyond what they can do. So I'm reassuring you that this is something that has actually been working better day by day. To give you a feel for the scale, we are currently selling about 12,000 items in Knusper. Czech sister of ours, Rohlik, who is in the market for 5 years, is selling roughly 18,000 items. And the regional part is actually growing because it is like an opening of the new world to regional partners. Even in a small country like Czech Republic is, and the same thing is now happening in Hungary and slowly also in Austria. So it always boils down to the fact that we've got these really specific clusters of customers who look for concrete things, and we can keep bringing more and more local producers under our umbrella. So that's the first part of your question. And then you asked about how we get the food in the warehouse to the customers. So it's important to start with the fact that we've got 5 different temperature zones. Since you were engaged in the food, you might have a pretty good picture. It's all the ambient, the dry food that you typically buy in classic supermarket stores. Then you've got 0 to 4 degrees for the meat. You've got up to 6 to 8 degrees for one part of the fruits and veg, up to 12 degrees for a different part of the fruits and veg, the Teka and the Mopro, Milkerei Produkte. And you inbound them, each of them on a different timeline, because these goods have got very different MHDs, Mindesthaltbarkeitsdatums. So we've got typically anywhere between 400 to 800 different items delivered each day. By far the biggest frequency is the super fresh fruit and vegetables, followed by the Mopro and meat. And that's the part of the inbounding traffic. And the important part is then the speed inside. Once you click an order on our web, everything that you have chosen has to be picked and delivered to the packing station in less than 45 minutes. before your delivery starts. I mean, less than 45 minutes if you want it delivered within 3 hours. Then it takes less than 15 minutes to prepare everything into packs and for the drivers. And latest 2 hours before your delivery, the drivers are departing from our warehouse, having typically 10 to 12 orders, i.e. customers, in one route. So not 2 to 3, but 10 to 12. Okay. And the typical purchase by a customer has roughly 25 items in it. Those are the averages. That's, if you looked over time, you would see this as an average. So typically 1 hour to get everything into the car and 2 hours to drive it to 10 to 12 different households.
And then the driver returns to the warehouse and picks up the next orders, right?
While bringing back all the plant as well as our reusable bags, correct.
And is this used widely? Because we discussed this with Flash and Post founders too. What is like the competitive edge if companies like Picnic or Rewe Online, or you are starting with the convenience business, beverages, beverage convenience business. So is this used a lot, this beverage part of your business? So are people ordering like beer, water, limo with your business model?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Typically, a very, very usual order has one or two crates of beer, limo, spezi, Coca-Cola, you name it. And the reasons why it's just one or two and not four or five, as you might see in Flash and Post, is because the frequency of our purchases is much faster than just the drinks businesses. And therefore, the customers order more frequently smaller amounts of crated drinks.
Okay, now you might know Customs on the Podcast is listened also by a lot of managers of the classic food industry. And if I were sitting in their chair, they would ask themselves now, okay, what Erich is telling yet, it's from a customer perspective, a very compelling business model, local food, regional food, very convenient delivered. But, you know, margins are kept somehow. Last mile is expensive. You need to pay for this kind of warehouse. This can never become profitable. Like, it's the same argument another generation of managers used for Zalando. Obviously, you don't need to report to those managers, but still, this argument is on the table. So, how can this become profitable? Because you pay fair prices to local producers. You're doing all the logistics that is paid by the customer in the brick and mortar channel, because they have to drive to the store and pick up the merchandise themselves. You're not charging higher prices. Is there a delivery fee included in this business? And how much is it?
Only if you order a smaller item than 79 euro, then you do actually have a delivery fee, small delivery fee.
But above 80 euros, it's free. So yes, the 3-hour service is included. So, and then their main question will be, how do you earn money?
Well, we already earn money in our home business. So 3 years after the business scaled up, it became profitable on the bottom line. Simply because we don't spend billions of dollars on the very expensive logistical infrastructure. We have one 10,000 square meter warehouse from which we serve the whole Munich and surrounding. And if you compare it to the tens and tens and tens of supermarkets that you would otherwise have to have around the Munich, you already see a significant capital investment difference. Okay, that's one part. So the fact is, we already proved that we can be profitable in the Czech and Hungarian markets. And that is driven by the fact, and this is an important differentiator, which also portrays in Germany, our average basket is 4 times bigger than what typically you would see in Rewe's. Typical Rewe's and Edeka's, we always benchmark to them because that is our competitors, not the online players, but the brick and mortars, those who currently sell 300 billion worth of goods. Their typical average purchase is 20 euro. Ours is 80. Okay, and that gives you a scale of the margin. That's an important part. And the second part, or the third part, because I said already we have one warehouse and not tens and tens of stores. The important part is also to realize that somehow the German market is seeing itself as very thin on margin. Yes, the end prices are extremely competitive. We see, for example, quite a shocking difference to Austria. Austrian prices are significantly higher than German prices on exactly same goods. The competition is lower. The market has evolved differently. But German market is also huge, and also the buying prices on the large-scale shopping, the industrial production, all the Nestles and Procter's and Unilever's, also have very competitive buying prices. And therefore, while both ends are competitive, the margin is reasonable. This is not a margin which is razor thin unreasonably. And that also shows when you look at the bottom line of the mega players like Edeka's, Rewe's, Lidl's and Schwartz, they're phenomenally profitable. This whole notion of no margin on German market is a nonsense.
At least it's compared to the overall revenue, which is like 300 billion, the overall margin out of this market is comparatively lower than the fashion industry or the furniture industry, sure, for example. But that's where the low margin argument obviously comes from. But what do you think can then be, I think you've communicated a number for 2024, where you want to reach more than 1 billion in the German market. So in 2024, if we grew with the same speed, we will have like 4 to 7 billion overall e-food revenue in Germany. I would guess.
You are on my optimistic side. When you look at the forecast of various industry experts, they typically forecast around 3 billion size of online market in 2024, which I think is too low, too conservative.
Those are not the experts. The experts, yes, are like Udo, me, and you. So it's, yes, 7 billion. So we define who are the experts. So, but what do you think can be? And we are usually arguing, and then you have listened to the Udo podcast too. We are usually arguing that we will see a faster share of the a faster share increase in the top cities, obviously, because there are some structural effects behind it. So a city like Munich or Berlin, where we might see already today a 5% market share, let's be optimistic about this one, in 3 years, so end of 2024, what is your best guess? Where can this market share be?
Purely talking on the basis of a best guess, I would expect that these cities would be close to 10% penetration.
So at least double the rate from today.
Yes, I expect that in 3 years, the market will double in size.
And will this be limited by demand or by offer? Because when I remember correctly, the conversations with other food delivery services in the beginning of the Corona crisis, there was way more demand, and Ocado was a very good example. They even limited the basket size for new orders. You had to wait for weeks until you get a delivery slot. So will this be a bottleneck on the demand or on the delivery side?
It's a good question, because a model like ours takes some time to scale, as in it is dependent on the availability of specifically designed warehouses in vicinity of cities, which are going to be very much competed in the next years. So the limitations on my assumptions will be two: how fast players like us will scale. And for us, we want to cover all urban population of tier A and part of tier B cities within the next 3 years. So it will take us up to 3 years to get our service available to 30 million Germans. That is roughly 10 plus million households. And this will be predominantly urban population. It is yet to be seen how this model scales up outside to the more rural population. That game is not yet obvious. And I believe that the scalability of this model is somewhere in the range of 2 to 3 years on a fastest note. So it will take 3 years at approximately the fastest pace to get the service available to one third to half of the German households.
Okay, let's go with the 7 billion number in 2024. The next question I usually get from managers in this industry is, what part will be this kind of new quick delivery services? Let's say the services that deliver within minutes. It's not 15 minutes anymore, as I have learned. It's now sometimes 30 or 40 minutes, even from Gorillas or Flink. But where do you see the role of this super fast delivery as a share of the overall, like, 7 billion we've just announced for 2024?
Just for the records, I don't expect the market to be 7 million in 2024. That would be just phenomenal growth, never seen anywhere in the world. So I'm inclining to expect the market at 4 to 4.5 billion in 24. That would be my best guess. But to your question, I often get asked, how is a business that delivers in 3 hour compete with a 15-minute delivery? And I say, these are two different markets. And I don't know what size the super fast delivery will have. I believe this market will evolve, will be successful. There will be just one winner in that market to be seen over the next 2 to 3 years. But I compare it to the physical world. Even in physical world, these two markets coexist next to each other. You've got big supermarkets where you buy your big family shopping, everything from meat to fresh food to groceries to Waschmittel. And then you've got a corner store with very few items, but available to you in a 2-minute dropout when you need to buy the milk that you forgot or the butter for the Sunday cooking, which is already being prepared. These two segments will coexist next to each other. What will I expect happen to the super fast is that in order to come up with some profitable model, they will be expanding their proposition to become a platform for super fast delivery of non-food, because that's the one of the only two ways available to make profit there. Either you become a delivery service to within the city, inner city, for different third parties, or, and that will happen in parallel, you have to price up your goods as the small stores do. If you go to the corner store, they have got only a few items, but they are a lot more expensive because you pay for the proximity. And that's so different that it happens on a parallel rail compared to our business, which will never compete to deliver in 15 minutes. Because do you need your full Wocheneinkauf in 15 minutes? No, you don't. If you get it in 2 hours, you get what you need.
If there's like a company offering me like the same assortment, but within 50 minutes, I guess people would buy it in 50 minutes. But let's see. There's no competitor yet to be seen. On this note, do you see any competition? Because if I was looking into Knusper, I was reminded at least in some aspects on Picnic, which is you building this business at the opposite part of Germany in Nordrhein-Westfalen. But how close is Picnic to your business?
It's somewhere in between, because Picnic differentiates itself in two aspects that we consider extremely critical. Picnic's assortment is much narrower than ours, even in terms of the size. It's below 10,000. And its assortment is just a subset of Edeka. They don't have their own assortment range. It's just the same thing minus something that you could buy in Edeka stores. And that is, if you saw my propositions, hugely different, because if you can get only or less in the online store that you can get in the Edeka next doors, the impulse to go online is significantly weaker. Okay, that's one big differentiator. The second one is their delivery model, for the sake of efficiency, provides no flexibility. If you tried Picnic, you would know that you wait until your street is assigned a delivery route, and then the delivery happens on a fixed schedule. So, for example, Tuesday, 4 p.m. And if you like it, you can order. But if it doesn't fit your schedule, you don't have an option. You have to wait until some fixed schedule fix your schedule, but you don't choose when you get your delivery.
Okay, got it. So I definitely can live with this differentiation. There's another differentiation usually made from expert in the market, which is kind of the shopping experience. If I understood correctly, and maybe I'm wrong here because I'm not living in the Munich area, there's no native mobile experience. It's kind of a mobile website I have to shop on. Is this correct? So is there kind of a plan to have like a native Knusper experience, or do you expect people doing their Wocheneinkauf on the desktop, so to say, or tablet website, but I'm not, I'm maybe walking on very thin ice here. Because I'm not living in the Munich area, but that's what I understood.
No worries. We do have actually native app, a standard app, and actually more than half of our customers use exclusively app to buy with us. And in many aspects, depending what your preference is, app is phenomenal. And as in many online businesses, some people prefer web, others app, but the penetration of app is much bigger than what I have expected before we started, to be honest.
Okay. So, and would you expect with the growth of Knuspa that the exclusive mobile experience, the exclusive mobile usage will increase over time?
Probably relative to the total number of customers. While it will grow in absolute numbers, it may actually even decline in the relative sense to the total customers, because what you get in business like ours is a wave of early adopters that tend to be much more digitally native than the later adopters. So as the service actually expands to people who are rather followers than adopters, I would even expect that the penetration relative to the total of the web might actually be slightly bigger than currently.
Okay, that's to be seen. Let's see how adoption rates develop over time. And then one last question about your operations in Munich. You said you have definitely a cost advantage because you're just working from one big warehouse. Obviously, just one warehouse with this kind of growth won't be enough, like in a year or so, I guess. Does it make sense in one region to have like one more than one warehouse? Because I guess if you're driving from your warehouse, I don't know where it's located in Munich, but let's say to the other part of Munich, then and if I remember correctly from my taxi rides in Munich, that's quite a long distance. So it sometimes takes over an hour to just get to the other side of Munich. Then from my point of view, that makes it way harder to earn some money on this delivery. So does a second warehouse make sense from a scale perspective in the future?
Absolutely. And in a city of Munich size, we'll definitely have a second warehouse. Right now, we are located in the north. We can cover the whole area, but as the density of our customer base will grow, we will be building probably within 24 months a second warehouse in the south or near the south area. And that will be the case for many large cities. Some will have three. So Berlin, long-term, definitely three. We'll start with two areas like Köln, Düsseldorf, Essen, Dortmund might get more than one. As metropolitan areas are connected, we will be locating them to different places in such combined metros.
If I were to give a best guess about your current challenges, I would say it's most likely to get like delivery drivers, people like working in the warehouse, even like finding new warehouses. Let's say you want to build a new warehouse in like 24 months, and you most likely have to start looking at it within the next 4 to 5 months to find like a space, very hard to get right now. Then getting enough cars shouldn't be a problem, depending on what kind of car you need. So that's my outside naive expert view. So if you're looking now into your business and let's say financing is not a problem at all right now to attract like investors for your business model, so what's kind of the bottleneck? What are the biggest challenges you need to solve on an everyday basis in order to keep this growth?
Pretty close. You got it very well. Finding the warehouses is not that difficult. There are choices. What takes more time is to refit the warehouses to our need, because that involves the bureaucratic process of approving the construction permit, which is rather unpredictable in some areas. And then particularly lately, anything related to construction material deliveries is complicated, because the logistical chains of the world suppliers have been collapsing over the last few months. So while we normally could take as little as 6 to 9 months to go from identifying and contracting the warehouse to launching, it can easily be 9 to 12 months these days. So that's actually where the scale is somewhat slowed down. You are very right that finding enough of colleagues for the roles of pickers, packers, and drivers in the warehouse is not easy. But so far, we have managed to find many sufficient channels. And in particularly among the colleagues who drive the cars, we see very strong demand because it's a flagship service of ours. So drivers are, let me call it, the pampered part of our business. And we are looking for drivers who are extremely service-oriented, who understand that bringing the food to customers needs to be with the smile, great attitude, very structured thank yous and invitations to customers, and making sure that it is actually our embassy, our ambassadors to the customers. And therefore, we pay our drivers very, very well so that the job is attractive, so that we can train them properly, and so that it becomes a stable job for them. So that pleases me extremely, because if you were able to see the ratings of our customers, the feedback and ratings of the drivers is the flagship satisfaction source in parallel to the assortment. Somehow, people do not expect that the colleagues who make their living by driving are phenomenally friendly. And we do exactly that. They do exactly that.
How many drivers are working now for your Munich operation?
Currently, I believe it's about 120 and growing fast.
And with this amount of drivers, I guess there must be like a pattern of like previous careers. So, and it's a lot of people, and you're searching even more. Next year, same time, it's maybe 300 or 400. So where have they worked before? What were it like former taxi drivers working for Amazon delivery? So where do you find this many people that are willing to work with a smile while delivering the merchandise?
Some come from the industry driving for the typical logistical companies. Many come from taxi and limo services. Yet further even come from service industries such as hotel receptionists, the restaurant waitress, which are very service oriented. So there is no particular pattern, but often it comes from the industry, but as well as service related ones.
And let's go back to some of the core questions. We are running a little bit out of time, but there's some questions I definitely need to ask here. In the core market, in the core Rolex market, how loyal are the customers? Is there any churn? Because you said you're like the 70% like market share, which is obviously almost a churnless business because there cannot be like too much competition. But can you talk about like churn rates? How loyal are the customer? I guess there's like many happy customers in Munich now.
It happens in two very distinct steps. Once the customers typically pass the fourth purchase, there is nearly no churn. I mean, this is the period between the first and fourth purchase when the customers experience the online e-grocery and they make a decision whether it actually suits them or not. And once they are past the fourth purchase, the churn is nearly non-existent. And typically, over 30% of customers become a lifetime customers, never leaving virtually.
What is the reason for the customers that are leaving the Knusper service? Because that might answer the question where this kind of limited growth comes from, the question between 4 billion in 3 years versus 7 billion. So what is their reason? I guess there must be some NPS questionnaire afterwards, why they are leaving or not returning. There must be something which is compelling.
The NPS of our customer is just phenomenally high. It's over 70 points. And if you know the industry numbers, they are barely at 12, 20. The best ones is the numbers I have received just lately is DM with 41, I believe. Everybody else is around 20. So it's a phenomenal satisfaction. But for those, I mean, it's like with every service, you've got the customers who will fall in love with online shopping. And then you've got segments of customers who just consider shopping a social experience. They may like to go to the store because that's a socializing experience. Others have it next to their work. And in the end, it still is okay for them to stop by on the way from the work. So I would never expect, like in any industry, that 100% of customers switch to online. But there is more than one third of everybody in Germany who will switch over time to online. And the question is, will it happen in 3 years, 10 years, or 15?
Yeah, it's interesting because that's definitely the less customers churn, the higher the growth rate will be in the market. So I know where the customers are coming from, word of mouth, and I saw some voucher initiatives over the last days. Are you equipped for peak demand? Because now we are obviously going into some kind of lockdown mode again, or will you close doors for new customers in January, February, because you're not able to serve them anymore?
No, we don't expect at all to close the doors. Right now we are running at the peak capacity, but we still manage to deliver on the very same day with very few exceptions within 3 to 4 hours. So we manage even at the high peak. The biggest days are ahead of us, 22nd, yes. 3rd and 4th. Yeah. So we will be tested, and these are the sleepless nights. But we manage to be ahead of the curve up until now, and today is already 20th of December, so there is a strong indication that we can manage at any time. Barring any magnificently tight lockdown when people will not be allowed to even leave their homes, we will be able to do that. And when the peak like this comes, we will be tested.
Okay, so loyalty, I understand. Where the customers come from, I understand. How the customers, what the margin kind of profile is and how you can earn money in the future, I understand, because that's something you can derive from your home market, right? There's a more established business model and you see how it scales, even with thinner margins because of the higher competition in Germany. What is your plan with an expansions into other cities? And I'm asking out of a self-interest, obviously, because I don't have any delivery service available here in my region. I'm not saying you need to move to Kiel area, but what are the next cities on your expansion map?
Those are cities we already have committed, because we have are very near to having the warehouse and fulfillment center. Next is Frankfurt in a few months, just a few. Next is Hamburg in the summer. Then we are going to Köln, then the Düsseldorf. Then we've got very nice two locations coming at Berlin that might be happening as soon as the next year. And we are looking at few locations in Essen and Dortmund. And that's something that I can see now happening in less than 18 months. Some are coming in 2 months, others in 6, but all of those that I mentioned would be coming in less than 18 months. Within the next 18 months, we probably will not be able to expand beyond these 7 cities. We still are looking at Stuttgart. Mm-hmm. We now see something promising. And in parallel, we shall be looking at the next cities, but I have no commitment yet beyond the ones I mentioned.
And you don't see any shortcomings in availability of drivers and delivery cars or so that could be like an artificial bottleneck for your expansion, even if money is not a problem?
Not yet, but it will come. Clearly will be a major labor pressure in the coming period. But we are just now starting to equip our warehouses with a new generation of automation. And that actually allows us to expand at this speed without being constrained by the labor.
And then one last question. You've talked about very high NPS scoring of your customers in Munich on your website. There's like it's hard to find this kind of review. So is this kind of an internal scoring? Because I'm not living in Munich, obviously. If people are listening here, I would be interested in getting some feedback about the Knusper service. So is there kind of a public website, a public review setup available?
There are 4 things that we look at, 3 of them are internal. So we measure NPS purely as a research approach, Net Promoter Score. Every single order that is delivered to customer can be rated, and nearly 40% of all our orders are rated by the customers separately for the quality of food and for the quality of the delivery itself. And so we get the very virtually live reading. If you come and see me in my office, you would see every rating coming along my screen, where you see both the number assigned to the rating as well as comments from the customers. And the third part, which is publicly available, you can look at the Google Maps, look up at knusper.de. You will find over 500 ratings by the customers, which are totally independent, totally public. We cannot influence them. So this is as good as it gets to you seeing how customers view us.
Nice. It's a really cool business. Sometimes it's a little bit hard to believe that everything is so cool how you're telling it, because we are looking now and we're searching for those kind of business model now for years, especially with this local approach, helping local farmers. I'm trying to reach out to Mr. Brandl
to
get some feedback. I hope I haven't forgotten anything. So it was a pleasure having you here as a guest, especially in this peak times now, in the evening of the 20th of the December. Wish you all the best in scaling your business. Definitely will use it when it expanded into the Hamburg area, and happy to have you around helping the market moving into the online business in the grocery industry.
Thank you, Alexander. It was a pleasure to be invited, and very nice Christmas to you and to your listeners.
Das war schon. Ich hoffe, es hat euch gefallen. Vielen Dank auch nochmal an Udo Kieslich, der mich hier mit ein, zwei spannenden Fragen auch versorgt habe, die ich an Erich stellen konnte, die deshalb auch zu einem sehr, sehr spannenden Gespräch geführt haben, aus meiner Sicht. Es geht auch in der nächsten Woche weiter, und zwar mit einem ganz besonderen Unternehmen. Das ist nämlich Fricke Landmaschinen. Zwischen Bremen und Hamburg haben die meisten von euch noch nicht gehört. Mittlerweile ein Milliardenunternehmen, super erfolgreich. Der CEO und Eigentümer Hans-Peter ist zu Gast im Podcast. War ein sehr, sehr launiges Gespräch, und darauf könnt ihr euch dann nächste Woche freuen. Erstmal noch schöne Weihnachtstage oder frohes neues Jahr. Wer weiß, wann ihr diesen Podcast hört.